unflinching possession and jealousy. God, the jealousy beat through me in punishing fury as he held me to his face and ate the breath from my mouth. At the sound of approaching footsteps, he broke away, chest heaving, and crossed the room back toward the lectern. In a subtle gesture, he thumbed away the lipstick from his mouth, wiping it onto his pants. Trying to catch my breath, I somehow snapped into motion after that kiss, and after wiping my lips as he had, I hid my hands behind my back as I scampered in the opposite direction, putting distance between us. An older woman I didn't recognize popped her head into the room and smiled. "Oh, I'm sorry, Professor Bramwell. I didn't realize you were holding a meeting."
"We're just wrapping up."
I winced at the breathlessness in his voice, something the woman didn't seem to catch on to when she answered, "No problem." She quickly exited, her heels clacking against the hardwood floor as she made her way back down the hallway. Exhaling a long breath, he rubbed the back of his neck.
"Not getting caught is far more difficult than you might imagine. Even my lab is subject to the occasional visitor."
"We'll have to be creative, assuming you're interested."
"You know damn well I am,"
he growled, as if it angered him to admit it. "Then I know of a place. Library Rotunda. There's a room at the top that's used mostly for storage."
"And how would one go about finding you there?"
"I have work study tonight. My shift ends at 8. The library doesn't close until after midnight. I need to show you something anyway. Something I think you might find fascinating." Wearing his usual frown, he swiped up his bag on the way to the door and came to a stop alongside me.
"If you're smart, you won't show."
With a defiant tip of my chin, I stared back at him. "And if you want me as much as you claim, you will." Chapter 54. Lilia. From the cart, I lifted 2 physics texts and placed them on the shelf where they belonged. A glance at my watch showed only 5 more minutes before my shift ended, and I couldn't stand it any longer. My stomach twisted with the uncertainty of whether or not he'd even show. Once the clock struck, I alerted Kelvin, as I normally did, and grabbed my bag, stopping in the restroom along the way to make sure I didn't have any food from dinner lodged in my teeth. I removed my underwear, feeling much more confident about that since the night I'd shown up for class without them, and stuffed them into my bag before hustling to the rotunda room. The ceiling of the circular structure was a glass dome that loomed over the marble floor 2 stories below it. An upper level of rooms rounded its perimeter, enclosed by a banister. Through a skinny door, I climbed a narrow staircase to the 2nd floor and peered into the rooms in search of Devrick. Shelves of books lined the walls of each separate room, and though there were desks with lamps for studying, the entire floor was often completely empty. I walked through the tall archways, finding Bramwell with his back to me, in a darkened corner of a small study area, hidden behind a wall of books, a small nook beside a window that overlooked the courtyard. I closed the door to the room, and with a twist of a lock, we were completely alone.
"All the years I've been at this school, I've never been up here,"
he said, not yet having turned to look at me. "I've only come up here a few times. This is where all the historical texts for Dracadia are kept." I sauntered up beside him, looking out at where the campus life buzzed. "It's so beautiful."
"You showed."
His tone carried a bitter snip of anger. "So did you."
"Well, I didn't have a choice. You're all I've thought about since this afternoon."
Quick hands yanked my arm, and my spine hit the wall behind me, knocking my bag to the floor beside us. His lips crashed into mine, fevered and impatient, tongues and teeth, frantic. He lifted my sweater vest over my head, revealing a white button-down beneath, and tossed it aside. His breaths hastened, and his throaty groan vibrated against my lips. After a moment of fumbling with my shirt buttons, he gave 1 hard yank, jerking my body and tearing it open. Buttons flew off, clattering to the floor.
"I'll buy you another,"
he said against my lips. Cool air hit my breast as he peeled back the lace bra. Across the room hung an elaborate gold mirror that filled one of the square wooden panels of the wall. In the reflection, I saw the two of us together. Me, a disheveled mess with my breast hanging out and a look of euphoria painted in my expression. And him, in his black shirt and slacks, a dark specter whispering dirty words in my ear.
Have you thought about that night? When I tongued and sucked on that little clit of yours?
He rolled my nipple between his fingers, and my lids grew heavy as an intoxicating need pulled at my belly. Yes.
Do you touch yourself thinking about it?
When I didn't answer immediately, lost to his ministrations, he pinched both nipples, inciting a small shock of pain.
Tell me.
Mouth bone dry, I nodded. Rough palms slid up both my arms as he guided them over my head and manacled my wrists with his hands above me.
I've been starving for you ever since.
Hungry lips hunted my throat, while his free hand palmed my exposed breast. He paused his kissing just long enough to suck one of my nipples into his mouth, the teasing little tug between his teeth coaxing a moan past my lips. Still holding me captive with one hand, his other palm slid up the hem of my skirt and he froze. I smiled and bit my lip at his discovery. I figured it was more convenient without them.
Fuck me.
The moment his finger made contact with my sensitive flesh, I arched into him, leaking a quiet whimper, careful to keep any sound that would echo through the rotunda.
If you ever show up to class like this, I'll take you aside and spank your bare ass.
Is that a threat or a promise? Groaning, he gave a slap to my ass, as if to prove his point. The pain smarted my cheek, and I jerked against him with a quiet grunt. He returned to his soft caresses over the needy bit of flesh that ached and throbbed for his fingertips. Another glance at the mirror and I took in the slackened jaw and drunken lust on my face as he teased me. How utterly intoxicated the man made me. As though catching on to what had captured my attention, he turned toward the mirror.
You like to watch?
Licking my lips, I nodded. Two fingers pushed up into me on a wet glide, and I felt him shudder around me.
Look how beautifully your body surrenders to me when my fingers are inside you.
I let out a shaky breath as he hiked my leg up to his hip. Cheek pressed to mine, he forced my head to stay watching as he bunched my skirt to my hip, my cocked leg offering a clear view of my bare flesh.
You're pink and perfect now, but you'll be a red and swollen mess by the time I'm finished with you.
His words rooted themselves in my head while I clenched around his fingers. I dug crescent moons into his biceps and fought to keep upright as my knees weakened. Bottom lip caught between my teeth, I rested my crown against the wall as he pumped in and out of me, curling his finger inside of me with each thrust. Wet sounds echoed around me, inside my head, filling my brain with lewd visuals of the two of us. Faster, he pumped while rubbing his thumb over the electric ball of nerves that had me choking on a moan. Eyes clamped, I focused on the pull of his fingers and the wet squelch of fluids that leaked out of me, dripping down my thighs.
Do you hear that, Lilia? How your greedy little pussy weeps for me? Look at the mess you've made on my fingers.
I turned toward the mirror, in which he held my skirt up, giving a clear view of his skin that glistened with my slick arousal. You make me this way, I whispered. A deep, sneering sound of amusement sent a shiver beneath my skin.
You don't want to know what you do to me, little moth.
He stirred his fingers so deep inside of me. I pushed up under my toes, releasing a whimper as his thumb pressed against my sensitive clit. Teeth grazed my jaw.
This is what I see at night when I'm drenched in sweat, stroking my cock to thoughts of you.
A kiss behind my ear.
You make me come so hard, I can't fucking breathe after.
His dirty words wrapped around my head like dancing devils, pulling at the strings. Tight. So tight that every cell in my body shook as I ground myself into his fingers, desperate and hot and needy.
That's it. Come for me.
The deep, burgeoning ache he'd summoned escaped me on a tearless sob as my muscles relented and an overwhelming pleasure bulleted through my veins. I tipped my head back, mouth gaping around a scream that he captured behind his palm. On a blinding explosion, I succumbed to bursts of ecstasy winding through my muscles in fevered pulses. My knees buckled, but he held me up as he circled his fingers, drawing out the last drops of my orgasm.
"Good girl,"
he whispered, his palm still pressed to my mouth. He guided my face toward the mirror again, where my heavy-lidded eyes and weak posture made me look drunk. A kiss behind my ear, and he slowly withdrew his fingers that glistened with my release.
"I'm going to fuck you delirious."
In the mirror's reflection, I watched him shove his fingers into his mouth, and a rough sound of satisfaction rumbled in my ear as he rested his head in the crook of my neck. He breathed against me for a moment, his fist in my hair, body trembling like he was fighting for control.
"You taste like innocence, Lilia. A good man would walk away from you right now."
"Are you a good man?" Instead of answering me, he lifted me into his arms and carried me to one of the study desks, where he laid me onto my back. After planting my heels on the desktop, my legs fully open for him, he stared down at me with the same reverent gleam in his eyes as the night in his office. I'd never done something sexual in a public place, where people scurried back and forth only one floor below. My belly tightened at the thrill spiraling through me. Although the door was locked, I fantasized someone walking in and seeing us, me spread before him like a sacrifice. His tongue swept across his lips, and he bent forward. One long lick up my tender seam, and I arched, mouth gaping for a scream I couldn't cut loose. He moaned and grunted as he sucked on my clit, but I wanted more. Not so much the physical, but emotional connection. To have him inside of me and on top of me, and feeling me as much as I felt him. "Tavrik," I whispered. "I need more, please." Sighing, he shook his head.
"I can't do that, Lilia. Especially if you've not had much experience."
A flare of embarrassment warmed my cheeks. "I told you, I'm not a virgin or anything. My first just wasn't anything spectacular. It stung, I bled, and it probably only lasted about a minute and a half. We did it a few times, and he ghosted me after."
"He ghosted you?"
"I caught him screwing another girl behind the theater." At that, he stilled, before breathing hard and rubbing a hand down his face, as if contemplating, overthinking, battling himself.
"Whether you're a virgin or not, the fact is I'm not a gentle lover. I don't want to hurt you."
His heated gaze trailed down my body and back, and a pained expression flashed across his face.
"But just looking at you stirs my compulsions. This rapacious need to take what I want."
I swallowed past the lump in my throat, unsure about my next words. All I knew was I didn't want him to stop. In spite of his warning, I still wanted it. Him. I was desperate to sate this curiosity burning inside of me, this cliff dive into unknown waters. "Then take what you want." Brows furrowed, he stared down at me.
"You're certain of that?"
"Yes, I'm certain." Lowering his gaze, he rolled his shoulders back, seeming to mull it over, undoubtedly calculating risk and consequences as his analytical mind would. A hard thunk beside me was the heel of his palm hitting the desktop, and on a growl of frustration, he straightened himself, the clink of his belt a small victory. He unfastened his pants, and it was then I realized this was really happening. I was about to fuck my professor. He pushed down his pants and sprung that monstrous cock free. I swallowed a gulp as I stared at it, standing tall and erect, heavy and ready to plow into me. Physics told me he'd never get that thing inside of me without some serious damage. The way he casually held it in his palm like a lethal weapon, taunting me with it, left me both desperate and terrified to know what it would feel like moving inside of me.
"I can assure you, this isn't going to last a minute and a half. I'm not some adolescent boy who comes the moment his dick gets wet. I'm a man who fucks hard and thoroughly enjoys the torment of delayed gratification. You're going to be sore, and I really fucking hope you want this, Lilia, because you're going to hate me when it's over."
"Why? Are you going to ghost me too?"
"Well, I don't think I'll be able to stay away from you after this. But let me be very clear."
He gritted through clenched teeth as his hand gripped my throat.
"I don't share. If anyone else so much as looks at this pussy, I'll take pleasure in dissecting him, starting with his eyeballs.
It seemed the jealousy of Spencer's uninvited kiss hadn't entirely faded just yet. And like before, his psychotic comments shouldn't have sent a flutter to my stomach. The possession in his tone should have had me running in the opposite direction. But I'd known bad guys my whole life. The skeevy, slimy types who took from girls and ultimately didn't give a damn about them. I knew boys who hurt girls for their own selfish pleasure, who cast them aside afterward, as if they were useless, used-up rags. Devrick was a different breed altogether. As he'd said, a man, not a boy. The kind who broke the rules in fucking his student, but was courteous about it, giving pleasure before taking. Bad, though? I suppose that was yet to be determined, but I was willing to take the risk. I was willing to lay my pride down just to feel the kind of passion I'd only ever read about in books. I wanted his rough hands and teeth, and to feel his sweat against my skin. When I reached for him, he gently batted my arm away and stood stroking himself in front of me, drawing his hand up and down his cock in a way that had my thighs trembling in anticipation.
Show me what I shouldn't want. Make it hurt.
Swallowing hard, I slid my fingers over the throbbing ache between my thighs. Eyes on his, I plunged two fingers inside of me and watched the veins in his neck pulse to the surface. Still pumping his stiff cock, he licked his lips with a ravenous glint in his eyes.
What do you think about at night, when your fingers are knuckle deep inside this pussy? Tell me what you want.
A voracious need curled inside my belly like hot coils. I want...
Your thighs are trembling. Say it.
I want your cock.
That's exactly why you wore this skirt, isn't it? Why you tease your professor to the point of madness? You need to be fucked, don't you?
Yes. From his pants pocket, he tore a condom out of a package, and I watched with fascination as he smoothed it down the length of his swollen and hungry cock. It was when he lined himself at my entrance that he paused and lowered his head, the conflict clear in the tensing of his muscles. Do it, please. I wanted him so badly it physically hurt.
God damn it, Lilia. God damn you.
He notched himself inside, and a mewling whimper escaped me. He trapped the sounds behind his big palm, and I breathed hard through my nose.
Shh. Take it a little at a time.
Hands balled into fists at my sides, I nodded.
I'm gonna go slow. I promise I won't push all the way until you're nice and stretched.
I panted through my nose as he kept his hand held over my mouth. Little thrusts at a time, he tunneled himself deeper, deeper. My muscles keening with his rigid intrusion.
God damn, you're so tight.
He said on a ragged breath.
Take a little more.
Inch by inch, he filled and stretched me, the pressure inside of me swelling, reluctantly welcoming him until at last, on a painful sting, he was fully seated. Hands balled to tight fists at my sides, I continued to breathe hard through my nose as I took in the dizzying fullness of his cock inside me. My body had tensed so much I felt lightheaded by the time my muscles eased up. God, don't pass out. Bent over me, he stilled, resting his head against my shoulder, his muscles rigid and vibrating with what I imagined to be pent-up energy and frustration ready to tear through me.
Are you okay?
At my whispered, yes. He lifted his head and drew his hips back, then drove forward again.
I needed this.
He rasped, his jaw tense and flexing, as he ground his hips into me so deeply it stole my breath.
I can't tell you how badly I needed to fuck you, Lilia.
A tortured sound ripped from my throat, captured by his palm, and he rocked in and out of me again with rough and powerful strokes, plundering as he'd promised. But each glide arrived smoother. I clawed at his arms, holding on to him, and something inside of me shifted. I took in the feel of his body against me, the vigor in his tight muscles, the way his skin moved across mine, rousing a humming in my nerves. The quiet stuttering breaths, the frantic digging of fingers and trembling of arms and legs. He was everywhere, across my skin and inside me, winding himself into my bones and muscle, moving like the violent waves of the ocean, that deep, vacillating sea which pulled me like the tides. A force of terrifying strength. I tilted my head back toward the window beside us, through which the stars twinkled with constancy in a world that felt like it was spinning out of control. Time liquefied between us, rippling in slow currents that bent and swayed with our sweat-slickened bodies. I was slipping, falling, tumbling into feelings that I'd never felt with anyone. The tightness in my chest promised implacable pain, but I didn't care. I wanted this, needed it, even at the risk that he'd cast me aside too, and I hated myself for that. Hated that I was so hungry for passion, starving for the need to feel so much at once, that I could even fathom letting him slice me open that way like one of his dead corpses, somehow brought back to life by his skilled hands. It was too much and not enough. The commotion of everything I felt right then sprang forth a mist of tears. What were these strange, foreign feelings taking hold of me?
Lilia,
he whispered. The hand that had quieted me stroked the top of my head, and I lowered my gaze to find his eyes brimming with concern.
Am I hurting you?
No, I didn't. I feel so much. A tearful chuckle slipped out as I tried to reel in my emotions. I'm sorry. I just don't know what to do with it all.
Sex should always make you feel something. Just let go.
A tear slid down my temple and I gave a nod. He thumbed away the moisture and resumed his thrusts, holding my head in place.
Keep your eyes on me, Lilia.
More tears spilled across my temples as I watched him staring down at me. Our gazes locked, our bodies tightly woven together. Could it have been more perfect? Could I have known another soul so intimately as in that moment, with the two of us wound so tightly together? Entombed by rapture and the shame of knowing we'd breached the forbidden boundary and there was no going back. The sound of voices and approaching footsteps brought him to a halt. The doorknob rattled, and I slapped a hand to my mouth, not daring so much as a breath. He hoisted me up into his arms and carried me to the shadows of the room, pressing my back into the wall there.
I thought you said no one comes up here,
he whispered. I've never seen anyone up here, I whispered back. The intruding voices grew louder, telling me they were just on the other side of the wall now. Deverick slid his hand over my mouth, holding me propped against the wooden surface that pressed into my spine, his tip prodding my soaked entrance.
There's an entire collection on Dracadian history up here, one of the voices said. I could spend hours reading through these books. You're such a nerd, another voice chuckled. What are you looking for, anyway?
As the two prattled on, I could feel Deverick's cock impaling me, pulsing with impatience. He rested his forehead against my shoulder, shaky, warm breath scattering over my skin. Slowly, I slipped lower, lower, until his cock slid back up inside of me, and when I arched, his grip over my mouth grew tighter.
Shh.
He whispered, giving small thrusts in and out of me, his eyes aflame with a burning voracity that refused to be smothered. A feverish craving simmered in my veins as I dug my nails into his muscled shoulders. While the two strangers on the other side of the wall spoke of history and their class schedules and other benign conversation, he fucked me. I turned just enough to see the two of us in the mirror, the indent in the cheek of his ass every time he drove forward, the tension in his muscles and neck, and power in his thighs with every controlled thrust and sinuous roll of his hips. The raw beauty of our reckless fucking reflected back at me like a dark image I wanted to frame inside my mind. My breaths turned to a sharp staccato as my muscles wound tight, taking in the swell of his cock filling me. His teeth clenched, jaw wired and straining. Sweat gleamed over his body while his muscles flexed around me, destroying me from the inside out. As the footsteps finally retreated, he let out a shaky breath and slammed into me harder, faster, thumping against the wall marked the fervor in his body. The tension rippled inside of me, twisted and curled, as I rode the edge of something wonderful. A deep cramping ache bloomed in my taut muscles, and I arched into him, surrendering to this rapturous destruction. He groaned and grunted while holding me tighter, rutting against me like a feral beast, faster and faster.
Fuck. Fuck.
Jaw cocked open. He squeezed his eyes shut and let out a shuddering breath of relief. Long cords in his neck pulsed with each unsteady jerk of his hips. His body shook so hard I thought he'd drop me. A look of pain and ecstasy claimed his face as he stared up at me, filling me with his release. I stroked a hand down his damp hair, watching the euphoria wash over him, the focus and intensity as he succumbed to his climax. The most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Something shifted, electrifying the space between us. Shadows of a young and naive girl slipped from every sharp breath that quivered out of me. I was different now. Changed to something I didn't recognize, something far more vulnerable, exposed. I wondered if he could see it in my eyes, the pathetic infatuation that had to be glowing there. Still drunk off what we'd done, I turned away but felt the grip of my face as he guided me back to him and pressed his lips to mine. My body slid down the wall as he lowered me to the floor.
"You are sublime,"
he whispered against my lips and slipped off the spent condom. I watched in rapt fascination as he tied off the end of it, eyes wide at the amount of fluid captured inside. Jesus, that looks like enough cum to impregnate a village. With a smirk, he tossed the condom into a small trash can.
"Let's hope the forensics team isn't the one who empties the trash."
I smile at that. Housekeeping arrives at about 10. Maybe we should tie up the bag, spare them the visual.
"I will, when I'm finished with you."
Reaching out for my arm, he took both of us to the floor, drew me into him, and holding me between his legs, my back to his chest, he wrapped his arms around me.
"Tell me you're okay. Tell me I didn't hurt you."
"You didn't hurt me."
"You're not sore at all?"
An ache pulsed between my thighs, raw and stinging, as if he'd torn me. "I didn't say that. I just said you didn't hurt me." On a relieved sigh, he buried his face in the back of my neck.
"I won't fuck you again tonight, but I will fuck you again."
Perhaps it was mindless on his part when he slid his hand down between my thighs and palmed my pussy. Not probing or caressing, just holding it there with the heel of his hand resting against my pubic bone. It felt wildly possessive, yet somehow sexy at the same time. Something of a balm to the lingering sting of his intrusion. He breathed into the back of my neck and kissed the shell of my ear.
"I've never felt something so intense before. Every moment with you is something new for me."
"This is all new for me, too." Together, we breathed in the darkening corner, our quiet little oasis. And I drank in the aftermath of what we'd done.
"What is it you wanted to show me?"
It almost seemed too morbid for the mood right then. But I reached for my bag anyway, yanking my phone from inside. A quick scroll through the pictures landed me on the one I'd taken of the skull with the black stone teeth. "I'm curious about this." He shifted around me, taking the phone from my hand and held it up to his face.
"Unless my Dracadian history is off, this looks like the skull of a young Kutanachki child."
"The natives who inhabited the island centuries ago?"
"Yes. You see these black stones here?"
He reached around me, pointing at them on the screen.
"They sharpen them for teeth. Early dental care."
"Were they cannibals?"
"Some believe they were. They were said to have silver, glowing eyes, and beastly fangs."
"Noctisoma?"
"I suspect so."
Pieces pulled together, forming a picture that left me questioning the link between the stones and Noctisoma. "Do you think the stones served another purpose, though?"
"Like what?"
"Bryson told me that they isolated a new chemical from black stones called castion. They found it in the gizzards of seagulls and ravens. Earlier, the assistant professor told us that some birds tend not to become infected with Noctisoma." He handed the phone back and pulled me against him as before.
"It's an interesting theory. Perhaps one you might consider pursuing while you're here."
"But not you? What if it's a cure for Noctisoma?" He kissed my temple.
"I'm not looking to cure Noctisoma. The organism has so much potential as an anti-neoplastic, anti-metabolite, antioxidant. And of course, autoimmune therapies.
Yes, of course. But for those who don't want to be infected with the worm itself, it might prove effective.
It might. And I encourage you to establish a hypothesis. Perhaps something you might consider for a thesis someday. I can direct you to some resources if you'd like.
Thesis someday? It sounded like an unkept promise that a parent would make. Why did that have such a condescending ring to it? Yes, I would like, as a matter of fact. I didn't mean to have such a snippy edge to my words, but my mother had passed away from infection. Had someone investigated even the smallest possibility of an antitoxin, I'd have surely been willing to administer it to her. His arms tightened around me.
You're angry.
I'm not angry. I'm just frustrated.
I don't blame you, but my condition doesn't afford me much time to venture off into other avenues, as noble as they might be.
I sighed, reminded of the cause behind his research. I know. Perhaps I can study gastroliths and blackstones, and you can study the toxin, and we'll compare our studies every night in bed.
After sex, I assume.
I tenderly ran my nails over his arm. Of course. No one wants to talk about worms during sex. That's gross.
It is. And besides, I have a one-track mind the moment your panties come off.
He slid his hand down my thigh, giving a slight squeeze. Someday, maybe we can have a proper date.
You're inquiring about activities beyond sex?
It'd be nice to eat an actual meal and maybe take a romantic stroll after.
I've eaten quite heartily whenever we're together.
His teeth grazed the shell of my ear, and I tipped my head, smiling at the tickling of my skin.
But if it's a date you'd like, I'll see what I can do.
See what you can do. Tonguing my back teeth, I kicked my head to the side. That sounds like a cop-out, if I've ever heard one. If you're not careful, Professor Bramwell, the freshman in my exposition class might beat you to it, I teased.
Freshman.
He grumbled.
I doubt his balls have even dropped yet.
Chuckling, I twisted around, resting my legs over top of his. Are you jealous? The dark smile on his face sobered to something serious, and he pushed a stray hair behind my ear.
Jealousy is a callow schoolboy's emotion that ends in hard feelings and bloody noses. What I feel for you, Miss Vespertine, would destroy lives.
Palm to my jaw, he kissed me hard and bit my lip to emphasize his point. As we lay hidden in our quiet little nook, he explored my body with his hands and lips and tongue until I was spent and boneless. Just before 10, we gathered up our clothes and exited the rotunda separately, so as to avoid any suspicion. He walked me to the bus stop, and I returned to my dorm with a smile on my face.
Chapter 55. Lilia. Somehow another week passed. Stealing away with Devrick had become my favorite dangerous game. The leering glances in class, the brush of hands as we passed in the courtyard, stolen kisses behind buildings and in empty classrooms. In the darkest corners, hidden from prying eyes, we were more than professor and student. We were forbidden. Scandalous passion and the ache of longing wrapped in a blazing fire too powerful to smother. At night, we held trysts in the most obscure places. Sometimes his lab, his office, the top of the clock tower, anywhere that was warm, hidden away from others, and lacked cameras. After sex, he'd pull out his books, and we'd lay naked in quiet study until it was time to return to our sleeping quarters. 3 days before, we'd met in our secret little room in the rotunda, where he'd helped me study for my parasitology exam, quizzing me while I rode his cock. Sex had become easier, more thrilling, and I found myself far more in tune to my body than I'd ever been before. He taught me things I never knew about myself, unlocking the dark fantasies tucked deep inside my head that I'd always feared were some strange anomaly. I felt safe voicing them to him. The desire to have him bind my hands and grab my throat, and I enjoyed the nights when he'd indulge them while whispering dirty secrets in my ear. At times he was rough and abrasive and used my body to burn off the frustrations of the day. But then afterward, he would lie beside me and trace the contours of my bones with his gentle fingers, telling me how beautiful I was. I knew that what I felt for him had evolved into something completely foreign, a beautiful complexity that was as pure and thrilling as it was forbidden. And in the wake of everything, the stresses that had plagued me only weeks ago withered to calm. It seemed Spencer had finally come to terms with some things, as he hadn't bothered to approach me since that day in the hallway. I'd caught him hanging around Kendall more frequently, and made a point to wave when I passed him on campus, which he awkwardly reciprocated. I paid off all of B's tuition, which in turn eased some of the pressure on my relationship with Connor, and with that off my shoulders, I was able to focus on my studies, acing my exams. The measly 4 hours of sleep I'd always mustered had somehow blossomed to 6, and I'd had to start setting my alarm just to ensure I woke up on time each morning. I forgot the world outside of the gates of Dracadia. If heaven existed, I'd found it in those ancient dark hallways, under cold, misty skies with autumn's wet leaves sticking to the soles of my boots, in the scent of coffee and old books. And him, my moody and devilishly handsome professor. Camped out at my desk, I flipped through one of the texts on the Kootenochki tribe I'd borrowed from the Adderley Library. While most students weren't allowed to remove the texts, Kelvin had let me check it out on the promise that I would promptly return it afterwards. I'd hoped to learn more about the Black Stone Teeth, but most of what I'd read up until that point had been folklorish tales about the tribe, how they'd supposedly hunted the God-fearing and put evil serpents in the bellies of good Christians. At a knock on my door, I frowned, closing the book. A shock of surprise jolted me when I opened the door to Professor Gilchrist. "Miss Vespertine, may I come in?" I didn't know why I suddenly felt like I was in one of those vampire movies, debating whether I should invite the demon of the night inside. Was it even normal for a professor to visit someone's dorm? I'd never seen anyone else visited by a professor. Sure. Stepping aside allowed her access to my room, and I scanned the space for anything personal I may have forgotten to put away. Once inside, she closed the door behind her and crossed her arms behind her back. "Miss Vespertine, I've been struggling with something for a while now, and I've come to the conclusion that it's best to confess." "Okay?" I bit the inside of my lip to hide my trepidation. "I know the woman in the study that you wrote was your mother." She crossed the room, staring at the picture of me, Bea, and my mother. "The moment I saw you, it was as if I was looking right at her again." "You knew my mother?" "I was an undergrad when I first heard of the Crixon Project. At the time, I didn't really have much direction in mind. I just knew I wanted to get into some fast-paced science, and the Crixon Project held so much potential. I signed on as a lab assistant and secretary for Dr. Warren Bramwell." She turned to face me, gaze cruising over my room as if looking for something else to examine. "For the participants involved, it paid handsomely. A life-changing sum in many cases. Your mother was part of the control group. Seeing as she was a native Dracadian who'd lived here all her life, Dr. Bramwell hypothesized that she might have had some natural resistance to the toxin. In hindsight, he was correct. But that isn't what was most compelling about her time in the study. It was the pregnancy." I'd pieced together that much on my own, and had figured that was the reason she'd left the study. What wasn't clear to me was whether or not it had been voluntary. One night, I was asked by Dr. Bramwell to stay after and input some data. It was as I was mindlessly typing away that I overheard your mother speaking with a certain doctor about his indiscretions leading to her dilemma. Dilemma? In other words, me. A thick, churning nausea roiled in my stomach as I imagined the possibility that she might have been talking about Dr. Bramwell. Such a thing would have made Professor Bramwell my half-brother. He urged her to get an abortion. As she went on, my pulse revved with impatience, waiting on the damn punchline to this joke. She told him she needed to think about it. Consequently, she left the study and never returned. "Which doctor? Who got her pregnant?" I finally asked. She smiled and shook her head. "Come now. You don't think I'd hand over such sensitive information without something in exchange?" "Of course not. But I couldn't begin to imagine what exchange she'd be looking to make. What do you want?"
"I want you to finish out the semester and leave quietly."
In one single gasp of breath, I felt spiritless, soulless, as if she'd reached inside my chest and ripped out my heart. Leave Dracadia? The place that had become my solace, my sanctuary, I couldn't do that. You're the one who invited me here. I made a mistake. This is about Professor Bramwell, isn't it? Her lips twitched as if to smile. And she crossed the room toward the window opposite my desk that overlooked the sea. He's exceptional as a professor, you know. He's never once shown the slightest interest in any student on campus, which is why I certainly didn't believe the crap story about the Herrick girl. It was as if he didn't even notice them. When she twisted around, the humor on her face had withered. That is, until you came along. Nothing is going on. She held up her hand, cutting me off. Don't insult me. While the rest of the campus might be obtuse to your trysts, I can assure you they've not gone unnoticed. A person would have had to have made the effort to watch us, as careful as we were. We hadn't even exchanged texts because Bramwell didn't want a trace of evidence that someone could use against us. Why are you doing this? He's made it clear that he's not interested in a relationship with you. Hands behind her back, she chuckled. If that was true, he wouldn't have paid me a rather special visit yesterday. The implication in her voice had me frowning. When? Last night. The woman must have been off her rocker, because the two of us had spent the entire night together in his lab. Calling her out on the lie wasn't going to get me anywhere, though. Professor, going back isn't an option. There's nothing for me in Covington, and my home life has become unstable since my mother's death. You can't do this. I can. A meeting with Langmore, and it's done. I didn't know what that meant. What politics might have made that a real possibility? I only knew that leaving was not an option, not now. You wouldn't be here wasting both our time if it was that easy. You're lying. For one split second, I thought she'd plow through that door again, out of my dorm room and straight to Langmore's office to prove me wrong. I expected a smug grin and the pathetic explanation that she was giving me an option. None of that happened. Which proved I was right. I'd called her bluff. She reached into the pocket of her skirt and held up a computer chip. This? It could end my career, or worse. So I need more than your crap promise to stay away from Devrick. What do you want? I want to know who the members of Anonymous are. That was certainly not the significant bit of information I'd imagined she'd be looking for. While tempting, given my distaste for Mel as of late, I didn't have it in me to rat her out. I wouldn't know. Well, I'm asking you to find out. When you do, I'll tell you who Daddy Dearest is. Why, what do they have to do with you? After a few minutes of staring, perhaps debating whether or not to tell me, she huffed. I received a threat recently that they would expose something scandalous. I need to know. If I had to guess, it was probably the strange relationship she had with Spencer. What could have been more scandalous than her sexual relations with the provost's son? Can you at least tell me if Warren Bramwell was the doctor who got my mother pregnant? As if my concerns had suddenly dawned on her, she shot back a fiendish smile. Tell you what. You give me a name. I'll tell you if you're fucking your own brother. I needed to know. I couldn't stand not knowing. Fine. Cat. Dark-haired girl. Piercings. She's one of them. Cat, she echoed. It wouldn't have surprised me if she told me Bramwell was my father anyway, just to traumatize me. But a wild surge of relief shot through me when she responded with, "It's not Professor Bramwell's father. Thank God." This is a fun game, isn't it? Let's keep going, Miss Vespertine. I shook my head. I don't care. I don't care about my father. I never did. Why does it matter now? This vial contains more than your sperm donor, I can assure you. But if that's not enough for you, perhaps you might like to know how your mother became infected with the worms. How would you even know that? It was 4 years ago. I'm a scientist. I document everything. I thought the files were... I hesitated to say, not wanting to risk telling her more than necessary. Those files were what? Stuffed in some banker's boxes in the bowels of this school. Some of them were, yes. I was tasked with destroying them. A few of the boxes were stolen from me before I could shred them, but not before I scanned my own copies. She twisted the chip around, taunting me with it. This holds everything. Those files don't. I only have to give you a name? One name? Oh, honey. For this?
I'm going to need your ass on the next train out of here. It's just too much risk.
She tucked it back into her pocket, my gaze trailing her every move.
But I'll tell you what. You give me a significant name this time, and I'll give you a significant name. Deal?
It was true what I'd said. I didn't care to know who my father was, but perhaps knowing would help me begin to piece together the puzzle that still baffled my brain. Namely, how the hell my mother had ended up infected only 4 years ago. I'd only postulated that she'd come home from her mother's funeral and had somehow gotten sick. Perhaps something more sinister had been at play, though.
You won't tell them that I told you?
Of course not. I give you my word.
Melisandre.
She's the group's leader. Her face blanched.
You're certain of this?
Positive. They meet in some little dungeon in her dorm room. Staring off for a moment, she scratched at her face in thought, then quickly snapped out of it.
Very well. Since you've been so helpful, I'll extend you the same courtesy. Your father is.
My phone buzzed at my hip, but I didn't bother to look at it. Gilchrist glanced down and back.
Do you need to answer that?
No. My father is who? The ringing died down, only to start up again. I inwardly growled at the obnoxious intrusion, not offering so much as a peek at who it might have been. Just tell me.
Dr. Lippincott.
The moment she said the name, the world skidded to a halt. I shook my head, trying to process it, trying to imagine the possibility of truth in it, but I couldn't. It was absurd.
You're lying.
Why would I lie? He fucked your mother, got her pregnant, and Bramwell kicked him out of the project. So terrified that his wife was going to leave him destitute, he urged your mother to get an abortion. She disappeared soon after. I couldn't deny that her version of the story made sense, but there were a million possibilities, less traumatizing versions for certain.
That's why you invited me here.
Why you kept telling me to meet with him? It had nothing to do with my paper, my academics. She smirked and shook her head.
You're smart, I'll give you that. While I was intrigued by your knowledge on Noctisoma, I found it lacking. Do I think anything you've done in your life warrants a full-ride scholarship to this institution?
No.
You're a dime a dozen, Lilia.
How did you even know who I was? All I had to do was Google your name. As I said, you are a spitting image of her. Wasn't rocket science putting everything together? Still reeling from the shock, I shook my head.
You're a horrible person.
Brows winged up, she sighed.
I wasn't, truly. Not until you came along and fucked everything up.
She held up the chip again.
Before you leave, come see me. I'll give this to you on your way out.
Wearing a smack-worthy grin, she exited my room, closing the door behind her. Whether the information she'd given me about my father was true or not, I had no intentions of acknowledging or confirming it.
My mother had always described him as a conniving man,
and based on what I'd learned from Spencer, it might have been the only truth she'd fed me. No, I wasn't leaving. I had no intentions of going down without a fight, or staying away from Professor Bramwell, for that matter. Not now.
Chapter 56. Devrick. I rubbed my thumb across my index finger and flinched at the lack of sensation there. Fuck. I'd just taken a dose of the toxin 2 days ago, and based on the last dose, it should have lasted a week or more, long enough for me to synthesize more of it. In the glass dome, the moth Lilia had named Patroclus barely fluttered across the floor of the cage, not only no longer able to fly, but in a state of constant paralysis. The toxin was metabolizing too quickly. The effects were wearing off as the body learned how to respond to it. I should have had another test subject lined up, but I'd gotten too overconfident. Too fucking cocky. And I didn't have time to go hunt down Angelo De Luca to infect him and harvest more of the toxin, as I had with Barletta. All that remained was a single sample and what I'd harvested from Angela Kepling weeks ago, which might not even have been viable. If I wanted to save this study, to keep it from slipping into failure, I needed to find another victim. The reality weighed heavily on me, and yet at the same time, the only reason I'd made progress so swiftly was because I had sought out test subjects. Without them, I'd have been in a stagnant state of growing toxin and moths. At the click of the door, I frowned, turning to see Lilia enter the lab. An unexpected intrusion, seeing as it was early afternoon and she didn't typically come visit the lab until evening, but her presence was certainly welcomed. Every muscle in my body goaded me to sweep her up, but as I clenched my hands over the numbness that persisted there, I didn't move. The expression on her face as she approached told me something was troubling her as well. "And what is it?" I asked, wishing I could reach out and caress her face, but not being able to feel her skin would only stab me in the fucking chest. She stared off for a moment, frowning.
"Can you take me somewhere?"
"Where?"
"Away. I just need to get away for a couple of hours."
"I know of a place." I pushed to my feet and gave a jerk of my head, stuffing my hands into my pockets. For a moment, she looked confused. Rightfully so. I hadn't kissed her, held her, offered her any of the affection I'd given her over the past week. Wearing a downcast expression, she followed after me, and after we deposited our lab coats on the hooks in the autopsy room, I led her through the cadaver entrance to the door leading out into the woods behind the school, where I'd parked my car in a small lot. I opened the door for her, allowing her to slide into the seat.
"Jesus, a Maserati?"
she asked, the amusement in her voice an improvement from the somber tone moments ago.
"And black. How did I know Dr. Death would drive a black car with black leather interior?"
She ran her hand over the seat as she settled in. "It suits me." The Ghibli was a sportier car, but practical too, as it had a back seat where I tossed my sport coat and a trunk big enough to stuff a body. After rounding the vehicle, I slid into the driver's seat and fired up the engine. Locked in her preoccupations, she remained silent, just staring through the window, stirring my concern. "What's troubling you?" I asked again, driving down the small dirt road that ran along the perimeter of the school and down the mountainside.
"I learned who my father is today."
When she didn't say more, I cocked a brow and tipped my head to get her attention. "And?"
"I'm not sure I should say. I don't really want to put it out into the universe. He doesn't matter. He never did."
"Then don't say his name." I shifted the gears in the car, allowing it to pick up speed as we hauled down the mountainside at about 70 miles per hour. As though sensing my venturous intentions, she opened the sunroof and tilted her head back, closing her eyes beneath the few scant rays of sunlight pushing through the overcast. With my own head wrapped up in a mire of shit, I didn't prod her for a response. Instead, I let her enjoy the silence between us, with the cool sea air blowing her hair in disarray and Chopin's Nocturne in E-flat major blaring through the speakers. In spite of the mildly cool temps, a strange warmth settled over me, making me wish I'd opted for a t-shirt instead of the dress shirt. An ache throbbed in my muscles, though not necessarily unusual, given the dosage had begun to taper. As we approached a familiar road, I slowed the car, and Lilia sat up in her seat. I dared to turn down the long, tree-lined drive, even though it sent a pulse of dread through my veins, as memories emerged from the dark corners of my mind like corpses rising up from the grave. Beside me, Lilia looked around at the dark and dilapidated trees that hid the long stretch of dirt road.
"What is this place?"
I rolled the car to a stop just outside of a black, wrought-iron gate with Bramwell Estate etched into its metal. "It's where I grew up." Beyond the gate stood the dark and dreary Gothic mansion with its stained glass windows, steep, gabled roof and turret. The place had always physically looked to be in a state of mourning, with its weathered, vine-covered stones, chipped and decayed, and the unkept gardens my father had refused to keep maintained after my mother had passed. She peered through the window, giving a quick glance to me and back.
"You lived here?"
"Generations of Bramwells have lived here. Cade and I were away at school most of the time, so we rarely spent much time here, but yes, this was my home."
"Is this where you stay while on campus?"
"No, I haven't set foot in the house in a decade, not since my father passed. I hadn't seen my father in 5 years when our family lawyer had contacted me, urging me to pay him a visit. He'd been on his deathbed for some time, afflicted with the same condition with which I suffered. It was the day I'd refused to carry on his work, the day I told him I'd happily watch him die knowing everything would die with him. The house is mine, though. The bastard cursed me with it.
Your father wasn't a good man?
No, he wasn't.
So, the rumors of what he did...
A hesitation carried on her voice, as if she didn't want to risk letting me know she'd heard of it.
The Crixon study. Do you believe them?
Are you asking me if my father murdered 6 women?
I'm asking if he murdered my mother.
I couldn't look at her. My feelings for Lilia had grown to be complicated. The lies to protect her no longer came to me as easily as before. I don't know, I answered honestly. Perhaps the most honest I'd been with her. While the details of her mother's death and the timeline of her illness didn't scientifically add up, I knew my father. I knew his sadistic tendencies, his greed and desires. It's quite possible, though I've never heard of anyone harboring the parasite for so long. I can't even investigate the circumstances. There were files that went missing. A number of them were destroyed.
I think Gilchrist has those files.
Frowning, I turned toward her. How do you know?
Because she offered to hand them over if I stopped seeing you and left Dracadia.
These files have information about your mother?
Supposedly.
And you didn't leave? You didn't accept this offer? She lowered her gaze to where her hands rung in her lap, and a smile played on her lips.
After I lost my mother and B went off to school, I kind of spiraled into myself and learned how to find solace in loneliness. It became my home, the only place I felt safe. Then I came here, and I met you, and I learned that loneliness was a choice for me. This place is more than just a school to me.
The turmoil bubbled to the surface as she sat fidgeting.
I suppose I could have kept to myself, as I always have, and remained another forgettable face in the crowd, and maybe Gilchrist wouldn't have bothered. Or maybe she would have, and I'd have just gone back to my old lonely life and had all the answers I've yearned for.
She shrugged and looked away.
Answers that don't really matter anymore.
From her profile, I watched a hint of a smile play on her lips.
The decision was made the moment I met you, though. To stay here. I choose you.
Damn her. Damn this. What the hell was I doing to this girl? What the hell was she doing to me? I pushed past the revolting lack of feeling and hooked my finger beneath her chin, turning her to face me. I choose you, I said, and pulled her in for a kiss, feeling the smile against my lips. And believe me when I say, you're hard to forget, Miss Vespertine. Reversing the car back down the drive, I pulled out onto the main road and kept toward the north end of the island.
I meant to ask, why women? Why did your father choose strictly women for the study?
For years, I'd suffered through the rumors that my father had been no different than my great-great-grandfather, who'd chosen prostitutes as victims. It wasn't until I studied the parasite that I learned the truth of why. The toxin responds more favorably in women.
Why?
Haven't gotten that far. Genetics, evolution, there's so much left to learn about it.
I feel like I should hate this parasite more than I do. Everything about it fascinates me, though.
I sighed. Welcome to my world. We finally reached Amorous Cove, and I parked my car off onto the shoulder. After opening the door for her, I led her down a rickety staircase to the beautiful cove surrounded by the tall stone walls of the cliffs. In the distance, about a half mile offshore, stood the arch known to the locals as Lover's Leap, an archway that made up the tail of the dragon-shaped island. Lilia followed behind me toward the water, the urge to grab her hand smothered by the numb tingling in my fingertips. We finally reached the shore that opened onto white sand and the soft, gray waves of the ocean. I came to a stop on a short stretch the tide hadn't yet reached, and she sauntered up beside me, wind sifting through her hair as if it longed to touch her, the way I did.
It's so beautiful.
As she stared at the arch, I stared at her. Lover's Leap.
I remember seeing this one in a booklet I grabbed from town. I haven't read it yet. What's the story behind it?
A local, native girl, the daughter of a chieftain who fell in love with a simple Dracadian fisherman. She asked the gods for permission to marry him, and the gods refused, banishing him from the island. As I relayed the story, I towed the sand at the tip of my shoe, unearthing a shell that I picked up and rubbed the sand away from with my thumb. She climbed atop the arch to watch his boat depart, and out of nowhere a white squall struck his vessel, crashing it into the rocks beneath where she sat. Devastated, she leapt to her death. I handed the perfectly intact shell to her, watching her marvel at it as if I'd given her a rare jewel. From that day forward, the gods gentled the waters around the arch, made it shallow there, so no one would ever perish by those rocks again. The indigenous believed the arch to be a gateway to the afterlife. Her lips curved to a smile, and the wind blew a stray hair loose that I wanted to capture between my fingers and tuck behind her ear. But I didn't dare. I didn't dare because it would have only infuriated me to confirm I couldn't feel its silky texture.
Everything about this island is a story. The sirens of Bone Bay, the nymphs in Squillet Lake, and now Lover's Leap. Every corner seems to hold something magical and terrifying.
The waves drew closer, closer. She backed herself up, nearly tripping, and I reached out a hand to catch her. Biting back the repulsive lack of sensation, I forced a smile as she chuckled. "Well, what are you waiting for?" I asked, releasing her. "The sea awaits." She shot me a look, as if thinking she shouldn't dare to. Her bottom lip slipped between her teeth on a smile, and she yanked off her boots and socks, tossing them to the dry sand behind us. With her feet together, she took in a deep breath and closed her eyes. The waves reached for her again with a kind of longing that I could feel pulsing in my own chest. On a squeal, she jumped back, then cautiously stepped forward. Another wave followed the first, and I watched her legs jerk as she lifted her dress and let the water pool around her. Over her shoulder, she shot me a smile, one so fucking beautiful, I wanted to frame it, capture it, study the alchemy of it, how wonderfully intoxicating one simple expression could be. Emboldened, she skittered forward, letting the next wave pool above her ankles. A little more, and the next one pooled at her calves. I watched in awe as she let the sea seduce her, tickle her into a giggling young girl, dancing, hopping, and tumbling in the waves. It was there that my failures and her worries were swept away, cleansed by the salt and air and the sounds of calm that reverberated off the surrounding rock walls. It was there that I began to wonder if what I felt for Lilia was something more than I cared to admit. I dared not slip into those thoughts, though, because I knew fate and the world didn't give so freely. It lured us on a siren's call and pulled us to the inevitable depths of pain that followed. Lilia was a liability, a weakness, the one crack in my armor that threatened to crumble my defenses. I couldn't afford that, not when the rooks were watching so closely, waiting for the news of my latest variant. Yet the radiance she gave off was fucking addicting, a warmth that reminded me how cold death could be sometimes. She jumped and stumbled in the waves, trying to lift her foot from the water. After an unsuccessful examination, she hobbled back across the sand with her toes stuck upward, red trailing after her foot.
"I think I cut myself on a shell,"
she said, grimacing.
"Damn it."
When she finally plopped down beside her discarded socks and shoes, I took hold of her foot and examined the small cut just below her toe. "I've got something to clean it up. Hang tight." I strode back up the staircase to my car, and from the glove box I pulled a small emergency kit I kept stored there. An intense pain struck my skull at both sides. Fuck! Hands clenched at either side of my head, I screwed my eyes shut on the intense ringing that sliced across my eardrums like hot blades and fell to the pavement. The agony radiated outward, down my neck, into my arms, where it electrified my bones. As a searing heat struck my spine, I arched and grunted, feeling the attack crawl down into my legs, like my whole body was crystallizing inside. There was nothing I could do. Every muscle had locked itself into paralysis. Inside my coat pocket in the back seat hid the last dose of toxin, but hell if I could get to it. A stabbing pain pierced my chest, and I rolled onto my back, staring up at the birds, ravens, circling overhead. An omen of death. This is it. Impervious. Impervious. An invisible fist clamped over my lungs, banishing the air on an excruciating gasp. Fucking figured that just as I begin to feel something through this numb existence, fate would tear it away from me like a jealous lover. I close my eyes and let the blackness take me under.
Chapter 57. Lilia. Another glance back at the staircase and I frowned. No way should it have taken that long. The guy was too much of a neat freak to have to rummage through a car for 10 minutes. Or maybe it just felt like 10. Either way, I wasn't sitting around any longer. I tied my boots after having stuffed my bloody foot into my white sock and hobbled my way back up the staircase. It mostly just stung anyway. Not like I needed surgery on the thing. When I reached the top of the stairs, I nearly fell backward on seeing Devrick next to his car. His body twitched and convulsed, and ignoring my foot, I darted toward him. A sharp sting streaked through my knees as I skidded across to him. Devrick! Devrick! Like last time, I turned him on his side and looked around for something to place under his head. Jumping to my feet, I noticed his coat lying in the back seat, and I snatched it up. As I attempted to crumple it, I felt a hard object inside and rummaged through the pocket. A syringe filled with the purple substance. Breaths heaving, I stared at it in my hands and looked at him, unconscious and seizing. I could have called emergency, but they might not have gotten there in time. Fuck. I took hold of his trembling arm, studying the map of veins sticking up. Fucking drug addicts do this shit, Lilia. Just give it to him. Using the sleeve of his coat, I tied the fabric around his arm like a pathetic tourniquet. An emergency kit lay scattered over the passenger seat, and I rifled through it for an alcohol swab. With trembling hands, I swallowed back the thought that I was too late, that he'd been seizing too long, that his heart may have long since clocked out. Panic goaded me as I tore open the alcohol packet and scrubbed it over a vein in his forearm. Breathing hard through my nose, I popped the cap of the syringe and lined the needle to his pulsing vessel, the tip of it bouncing with both of our shaking. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. Please. Through a mist of tears, I pushed the needle, praying I hit the spot, and dispensed the fluid into his arm, as I'd watched him do that night in his office. Seconds ticked by, his body still racked with tremors. Come on, Devrick, please, please. I ran my hand over his damp hairline and choked back a sob. You can't leave. I won't let you. You hear me? I won't let you fucking die. You are my most important thing, and I swear, if you don't come out of this, I will fucking hunt you down in the afterlife. More seconds. Wake up, Devrick! I scrambled for my phone, tucked inside my bag that I'd left in the car, but by the time I returned to his side, he'd stopped shaking. A cold hollow expanded inside my chest as I stared down at him, lying so still on the ground. No. Devrick, wake up, please. He didn't move. His chest didn't move. Eyes didn't flutter. There was nothing but a sickening stillness that tore at my ribs. Dread stirred in my gut. It slithered up into my chest and wrapped its cold fingers around my heart, squeezing until I couldn't breathe. I shook my head, falling beside him once more. No, no! I punched his chest. His lips parted for a loud gasp of breath. Another gasp, and another. Eyes still closed, he rolled his head to the side, and on a terrified wheeze of relief, I zeroed in on his chest, clocking each rise and fall that told me he was breathing. It was then I noticed the sweat sticking to his face and neck. With the inner part of my wrist, I felt his forehead and cheek. Oh, God, you're burning up. I needed to get him somewhere I could administer some water and something to bring down his fever. My dorm certainly wasn't an option, and I'd never been to his staff apartment on campus. The hospital, maybe? But what if they did a blood test and found the toxin? Could he have gotten in trouble for that? He let out a quiet grunt, but when I lifted his eyelid, his eyes remained staring, pupils constricted, unconscious. I shoved my arms under his armpits and lifted his upper half. The guy was so bulky and heavy I could hardly manage, but after a few deep breaths, I strained my muscles and turned him just enough to pull him into the back seat of his car. Awkwardly fumbling to heft him onto the seat, I heaved, out of breath with the toil, and shifted his legs over the seat to close him in. It had been a few years since I'd driven a car, and as I slid into the driver's seat, anxiety coiled itself around my nerves. I fired up the engine and drove back toward Emberwick, which we'd passed on the way. In the back seat, Deverick groaned and grunted, and when I peeked in the rear view, I caught the shine of sweat thick on his body. Minutes later, I finally reached the downtown area and pulled into a spot in front of the apothecary I'd visited weeks back. Leaving him in the car with the windows cracked, I jumped out and dashed into the shop, where the older woman who'd helped me before greeted me with a smile. The smile faded as she seemed to catch on that something was wrong.
"I need help. My professor, he's got a fever. He's burning up pretty bad."
"Oh, my." She shuffled around the shop, grabbing various things from the shelves. My mind was so wired and wound around Deverick's condition, I didn't even notice what she'd grabbed. The two of us dashed out into the parking lot, and she opened the door, sliding into the narrow space between him and the front seats.
"Oh, he is very warm, very warm."
I waited outside, pacing, biting my nails. I'd always put a lot of faith into holistic medicine, but what if it didn't work? What if the toxins screwed with the healing properties of the herbs? She dragged a cool cloth over his brow and left it there, before crawling her way back out of the vehicle. "I'm going to make him some iced Black Rock tea. It sometimes helped bring my son's fever down. Just cool him with the cloth. I'll be right back." With a tearful nod, I slid between the seats, as she had, noticing that she'd unbuttoned his shirt and rested his head on his crumpled coat. It took me back to the day in his office, when he'd yelled at me for using it. The thought somehow managed to break through my fear, and I chuckled. "If you don't come out of this, I'm burning all of your expensive coats."
"You're not burning my coats,"
he mumbled, and a wheeze of elation shook my muscles.
"Deverick, open your eyes. I need to see that you're okay."
He squinted and grimaced as he shifted on the seat, but he opened his lids to show those beautiful fiery eyes. Though his pupils were blown, he seemed to have awareness, lucidity. I brushed the hair from his damp forehead and shuddered out a panicked breath.
"Oh, you scared the shit out of me. What the hell happened back there?"
"The toxin stopped working."
Disappointment loomed like a dark cloud between us.
"Why? I thought you figured out how to make it sustainable."
"I was wrong."
"I administered the dose in your coat. Are you mad?"
"Mad? That you saved my life?"
A frustrated chuckle escaped me. I didn't want to laugh, damn it. That whole scenario still had me shaking. "Here," the woman said as she passed me a tall glass of black liquid whose surface sparkled as if there were diamonds in it. "Have him drink some of this."
"What is it?"
Deverick asked, his voice delirious.
"It doesn't matter. You're drinking it whether you like it or not. I saved your life, therefore you have to listen to what I tell you."
"Fuck. You're going to hold this over me, aren't you?"
"For as long as necessary. Now drink." Steadying his arm, I helped him as much as I could, as he scooted himself to a sitting position. He frowned, as if still in pain, and the sweat still clung to his chest and neck. With an unamused expression, he took the drink from me and sipped it. With a slight raise of his glass, he nodded at the woman.
"Thank you."
"I'll be back to check on you in a minute, okay?"
"Oh, what's your name?"
I asked, before she walked off. "Francesca." The sound of that name rippled across my heart, and I wondered if she'd been the one to inspire my mother's alias.
"I'm Lilia, thank you."
With a wink, she hustled into the store, and I turned back to Professor Bramwell.
"So what? You can't feel anymore? Is that why you've avoided touching me today?"
Brows lowered, he stared down at his drink.
"Perhaps the most vindictive torment was having a brief moment of knowing what you felt like."
"So what does this mean?"
"Back to the drawing board."
On a sigh, he took another sip, longer than the last, and handed me the glass.
"Not a fan of tea. Not even your disturbing gothic variety."
Through an uneasy smile, I accepted the glass and stared down at the sparkling fluids. "It's Black Rock, and it's apparently very hard to come by, so I'm not letting this go to waste." I chugged the rest of it, which wasn't a whole lot, and wiped my mouth on the back of my hand. Another failure meant that he was at